This show was first broadcast on Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. For more information on our lineup of shows and the role we play in the media, visit freefm.org.nz.
This program is sponsored by New Zealand Bridge, sponsors of Grassroots Bridge across the nation.
Welcome to the Bridge Zone. You're at the table with Barry and Mariana. I am coming to you from Derby, even though it's spelt like Derby. What's been happening on NZ in your week?
There's been a couple of big events held at Whangarei on the weekend. Had a couple of glitches with the Brindirwins, would you believe it? There were slips on the Brindirwins and they had to close the road again. People had to go the other way and they were worried it was going to close again. There was lots of rains.
Oh, really?
But yeah. The road to Whangarei was not exactly as good as you'd hope.
Okay. And what event was that?
The Auckland Northland Main Regional Pairs and the Auckland Northland Main Regional Teams. Both 10-day events. So the pairs was won by, this is a great story, the bailiff, Patrick Carter, was playing with Grant Jarvis in the pairs, was coming home that night, not playing in the teams. So obviously, maybe he was a bit concerned about coming home over the Brindirwins, yep. I don't know, with all the rain and slips and things. But anyway, they scored 51 in the first session, thought they'd scored 56. So then they scored the second session. There was just two long 30-board sessions, and they thought they'd scored about 56 again. But they'd already been disappointed once, so they decided, oh, they might get a session prize or something, but that was about all, so they might as well head for home. Back home before midnight or whatever. Anyway, apparently Grant said to somebody, pick up a bottle of wine if we happen to stagger in for a session prize. Well, anyway, when they got back, neither of them had a phone with them. Grant was driving, and Patrick hardly ever has his phone, so anyway, he gets a phone call when he gets home to say that their 56 was actually a 68, and they'd actually won the whole thing.
Oh, my God. So,
apparently they'd finished with a couple of bad boards, didn't they? He was that flash and went home. The Whangarei Club wouldn't let people look to see what their scores were and you couldn't see any comparables or anything. So they really had no idea other than that their first 56 turned into a 51. So they had no idea. I think it was something like 68.9.
Bloody hell.
You'd think that two players that experienced would know, wouldn't you, that they scored 68? But apparently not. So they got home pretty comfortably in the end with an average of just over 60. Miriam Nisfish was second and Claire Mau and Wayne Burrows were third.
What about the teams?
So the teams was a bit of a different story. The winning team was, they called them the Livingston team, you'll be pleased to know, but it was, of course, Mike Ware, Jack James, Pam Livingston and Malcolm Mayer. So
lovely.
They were the teams. From the Sun team, which was George Sun and Ellis Young, Richard Solomon and Anna Kalmer.
Great.
The Fisher team wound up third, by the way. So that was Blair and Liz playing with Tom and Steph Jacob. Good size field, right? Having the trek up there and take your chances going over the Brindirwins.
Well, I had a game of bridge over here and I visited the Nottingham Bridge Club. Quite a nice little club. It was good. So it came in fourth, 53.13%. I played with the director.
And I see that you got 6 master points.
I did. We were just having a chat. So the Bridge Club is an older Bridge Club. They have just under 250 members. And they were talking about, what does your club do? And I was talking about car parking, because you have to park on the street. They don't actually have any parking. And I was explaining to them about how we've got over 100 car parks, And they said they actually lease car parks from the church on the other side of the road. And he said it's been an ongoing battle. So anybody that goes to the church doesn't pay. It's free car parking. They can take visitors into the church during the day, and that's free car parking. And when it's all dark at night, you have to pay for your car parks. So they have to lease the car parks, but no one's using the church. So when they use the church, it's all free. General public and the congregation use the church, it's all free. But when the Bridge Club use it at night, no one's around. They have to pay for it. And I was like, oh, I see. That it was a big bone of contention for them. So they were extremely jealous when I was telling them about Hamilton Bridge Club and our association with the stadium. And they were like, oh.
How easy was it to find a park? Or are you parked in the church car park?
I used the tram and I Ubered in. And the director dropped me off at the tram station. I rode the tram home. Yeah.
How much did it cost for a session of bridge?
It's free for your first three, so it costs me nothing. They give you three sessions free. And I said, oh, look, I'm only going to have one, so I'm happy to pay. It was £3 anyway, which is $6.
Oh, not too bad.
Yeah.
Not too bad. Now, what's the story? You got in trouble for talking too much.
Yeah. We agreed that we were playing ACL. And then when my partner first board, my partner opens one club and I say four plus, the opponents and my partner stared at me as like, what on earth are you doing? And so I thought, oh, you don't announce. And they said, no, we don't announce. But they do announce any bid at the two level, whether it's weak or
Okay.
strong. So a lot of them play Benjaminized ACL and weak
Does
ACL,
that
but
all, is that the only things they announce? Just two level bids and one no trump.
Multi twos. Yeah, it was pretty good, pretty quiet. They've got three rooms in this little club, and they actually had a tournament on Sunday. But big shout out to the Nottingham Bridge Club, especially to Nick Clark. They looked after me very well. Here's Peter Hollins.
The non-serious three no trumps. This is a fantastic convention, which is a slam bidding tool, but it's sort of like an addition onto some others. So before I get into what is non-serious three no trumps, I want to talk a little bit about the slam bidding techniques that you want to use, and then how you can really capitalize on this and add this into your game. Non-serious three no trumps wants to apply once you've found a fit at the three level, and I'll highlight how that could happen. Let's say that partner actually bids three spades instead. So if it's gone one spade, three spades, let's say that we play this as a four card invitational raise. So if partner's got 10 to 12 points and four spades, if we've got this hand, you're probably just thinking, okay, we want to be in game. I've got a nice hand, I've got 17 points, I've got a doubleton club. It's not too bad. But if you start visualizing some hands, most of them just say that you want to be in game. But if you think about absolute premium hand, imagine partner had, say, doubleton ace of diamonds, the ace of clubs, the king of spades. Well, in that case, that would be 11 points and you wouldn't lose any spades. You wouldn't lose any hearts. You'd have one club loser. And if partner had a diamond shortage, then you could take the ace king and then just trump the others. Or maybe you could think of ace, king of clubs, king of spades, queen of diamonds. That might be another one where you can make slam, where you just lose the ace of diamonds. So there are a couple, but you need partner to have a really good hand for slam. You need them to have at least two aces and actually really like their hand. Whereas you could imagine a hand with king, queen, jack of clubs, king of spades, queen of diamonds. Slam has no shot. You could also think of ones with queen jack of hearts, queen jack of clubs, ace of diamonds, and the jack of spades or something. And again, you still have no shot at slam. And there, the five level might even be dangerous. So here, I can think of a couple of hands where slam can make, but it's kind of stretching. So if you wanted to, you could tell partner, I'm only mildly interested in slam. And the way that you can do this is the non-serious three no trumps. You bid three no trumps here with that agreement of it being non-serious. Just says, partner, I've got very mild interest in slam. You've shown me four card 10 to 12 raise. I'm slightly interested, but only if you really like your hand for slam. And if partner doesn't, they just bid four spades. If they do like their hand, they can then go on and Q bid, and you can, which would show first or second round control in clubs, but also a hand that was interested, that wanted to cooperate. So you can narrow their range more and say, hey, I actually really like it. Whereas if I bring up another hand, let's say that we've got a hand like this. This time we've got 18 points, six spades, and a 6-4 shape. We open one spade and have partner bid three spades again. Well, this time it's very easy to think of a hand that can make slam. If partner's got four spades, don't really need anything there. If they've got ace of clubs and king of hearts and a doubleton diamond, you could make grand slam here. That's a seven count that could potentially make grand slam. So here, we want to tell partner we are genuinely interested and we want them to cooperate. So you could go ahead and bid four diamonds. And this would say, partner, I'm very interested in slam. I have first or second round control in diamonds, but I do not have control of clubs. I do not have the ace, the king, a singleton, or a void. And there, this gives partner freedom to go past four spades if they have control of that. If they have a hand that wants to cooperate, they could bid four no trumps. They could bid five clubs. They could do something, and it gives them a bit more leeway to actually do that. So here's a couple of examples of how you can use three no trumps to say, partner, I'm hoping you've got a really good hand. Or you can go directly to Q-bidding to be saying, I have a serious interest in slam. So the way to remember this is your three no trump bid is just your mild slam try, and your Q-bidding is your genuine slam try. And if you bypass three no trumps, you have said, yep, I'm interested and I want to really progress to slam, and this is where my controls are. Whereas if you bid three no trumps along the way, it says I've only got mild interest there. So the next thing that I want to address is, what if you've agreed heart? So let's say it goes one heart and it goes three hearts. What if you bid something below three no trumps? What if you bid, say, three spades? What's this? Well, some people use this as the replacement for three no trumps. But typically what I do is just have three spades be neither. We haven't done that yet. And now the responder actually answer and bid three no trumps saying, hey, I'm just following on. I'm not actually that genuinely interested. I am not serious using three no trumps for that. Or if they then actually bypassed it and bid four clubs, they would say, hey, I've got a really good hand for my three heart bid. I've got genuine interest and I have first or second round control while doing that.
Next week, we have the final episode in Peter Holland's Introduction to Non-Serious Three No Trumps. Director, please.
Judge Judy is in session. It's the bailiff today.
He is Patrick.
Good morning, Patrick. How are you this week?
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
This week's question is an electronic scoring question. I guess that happens all around the country. Somebody picks up and enters board 10 or enters the result, and sometimes some clubs have the analysis come up, or they have the scores come up, or whatever they have, so they see those and then realise, oh, hang on a minute, we've actually played board 10 first, and then that's board 9, and we've still got to play it. So somebody's seen a few details. What happens, Patrick?
Well, when you've got unauthorised information about a board, you haven't played, the director can, if they want to, let you play it and try to determine whether or not it makes a difference. It's very tricky with that when you've seen other scores on the board. So for what I do at Auckland, I choose a particular philosophy in the situation. I say, well, if you've seen other scores, you can't play it. It's too hard to judge. So I think there's two scenarios. When the boards have been played in order at the table and the person doing the scoring has just entered the wrong board. So let's say you've got 1, 2, and 3 and you're playing 1, 2, 3, and on the board 1, South puts it on number 3. Well, I think that's really down to South. So I blame North-South completely and give North-South 40% on the board and East-West 60% on the board. Whereas if the boards are played out of sequence, I think everybody should notice if you're playing board 1, then board 3, then board 2. So if they play them out of sequence and South does the same thing, they enter board 1 right, and then on the next one they don't notice it's board 3 and they put it on board 2. Well, then I think both sides are partially at fault, so I give them 50% each. And since I direct so much, that's my interpretation of it. Now, I'll grant you that you can have a situation where another director might have a different interpretation, because that's what I'm interpreting, is where the laws say you get 50% to a pair that's partially at fault, and 40% to a pair that is at fault, and 60% to someone who's not at fault. I've used my interpretation of what is at fault, partially at fault, or not at fault, and someone might disagree with it. I don't think there's nothing in the rule book to say exactly if that's how you're supposed to interpret it. It just gives you that idea of what to apply in each case if you think they're at fault or partially at fault. They don't give you examples of this is a partially at fault situation.
How often do you reckon it happens?
Well, in an ordinary club session, I'd say probably it happens once a session. Some sessions not at all, and some sessions you might get 2 or 3. Probably someone does it in every session. But I've taken a vote on this and said, if we didn't show the scores, I'd never have to do this. So like 90% of people say, oh, no, we want to see the scores. So that's what they get for a club session because I try to give the players what they want. The funny thing is that whenever it does happen, the first thing they always tell you, oh, we didn't notice any scores. Then when they've done it wrong, they claim they haven't seen a thing. But I'm sorry, you can't go by that. Let's say that there's a board where you can make a slam. Oh, well, if you didn't see a thing, that's all right. It's going to leave a sour taste in someone's mouth that on this board that the pair then bids a slam. You know, the other pair is going to say, oh, most people didn't do that. Well, I wonder if they did see something after all. So I wouldn't go down. You've really got to play it safe. Make it clear that they haven't seen them. Just occasionally people get lucky there's a board come out of feed-ins and no one else has played it yet. That can happen too. As it happens, if they do it on the first round, even if it's been played at another table, I don't show them the scores on the first round. I then start it from the second round onwards. It may seem funny, but the reason I do that is because A, you won't see many scores anyway, and B, I just got tired of people calling me to say, oh, this is the first round, there's other scores there. Is there something wrong? So you've got two sets of boards in play. So I usually hide the scores on the first round and then show them after that.
Well, thank you for that.
Thanks, Patrick.
Okay, bye.
Here's another 10 minutes with Mel Uhl, Marketing Communications Officer for NZ Bridge.
She said 93% of people that were aware of it. What was that group of people? That was
I did a survey. It was a small online survey, about 180 people, and asked them about awareness and what their perceptions were and would they be interested in playing and what they thought the benefits were. So, yeah, 93% of people had heard of Bridge.
That high?
Yeah, I was too, actually. Yeah.
I know this is certainly informed, but years ago we had a teenager from Te Kauwhata College that won something and they asked if somebody would come and speak to the kids at the school and I got elected. And I went along there and anyway, it was assembly. There was like 500 kids and they said, get up on the stage and here you go. And I thought, oh, God, I had no idea this was going to happen. Anyway, I got up and spoke a bit about Bridge, and I just got back from overseas somewhere where I'd been playing. Anyway, I asked that question. That's why I was interested. How many had heard of Bridge? I reckon it was well under 25% that had even heard of it. So it's quite hard when you're talking to 500 kids, talked about where I've been and what I've done and how people played overseas and a bit about professional bridge players and the sort of stuff that I thought might be interesting. Anyway, they were offering lessons for these kids. They were queuing up out in the foyer when I got out. We ended up with about 20 or 30 people. I was amazed. These are people that didn't even know what the game was.
But nicely done.
Difference from 93% to probably 23% that had even heard of it. Is that a generational thing? I mean, those 180 people were probably not teenagers.
No, they weren't. It was a 40 to 65 sort of demographic.
Right, yeah.
So even if they didn't actually experience Bridge, maybe their parents had or there was some sort of tie-up. I mean, if people don't even know about it.
That's the starting point, eh? Yeah. Know about it and know that it's got some attractive benefits. So, yeah, improving the attractiveness alongside the awareness.
You're knowing about it and thinking, a whole lot of 80-year-olds in a dusty room playing Bridge. That's not the image that you need to portray, but it's a bit hard to shake, isn't it?
It'll take some time. It'll take a consistent effort over several years, but, you know, what we'll do is we'll repeat that survey each year and just see if we can see slight changes in that, slight improvements in that. And this year, I was quite excited that we had 28 clubs participate in our lesson marketing via Facebook. So we ran a campaign, opened it up to all clubs to take part in. So they supplied all the information. New Zealand Bridge set all of that up, ran a Facebook campaign off our Facebook page, so clubs didn't even need to have their own Facebook page or any real understanding of it. And then I'm in the process now actually of reporting the results back to the clubs, held a few Zoom calls a few weeks ago. But yeah, 28 clubs participated, about 530,000 people saw the ad, and that's 530,000 people in New Zealand who have now seen the ad probably 3, 4, 5 times, because the impressions was actually 2.7 million. So the ad was seen 2.7 million times by 530,000 people. So not all those people are going to come into lessons, right? But hopefully, you know, a small percentage of those will click through the website and, you know, end up making contact with the club and coming through. It's also contributing to that awareness raising, you know, and those people will be talking in their families, oh, hey, I saw that this was, you know, so the actual impact of that will be greater. So So really, that's a really good start and a powerful way to, yeah, raise the profile, start to shift that perception.
I think that's awesome. That's like over 10% of the population, and it's a lot of people.
Once we place the ads on the Facebook page, we get a click number. And then what's the next step after that? And when do we run it? Hamilton put their hand up to be involved. So we run the ad, and then what happens next?
The ad runs for 4 or 5 weeks prior to lessons starting. And so what happens is, so you imagine you're scrolling through your Facebook feed, and then up pops an ad, you know, Hamilton Bridge Lessons available now. You click on the link, and it takes you through to a landing page on our website, which is www.playbridge.co.nz. Mm-hmm. So if anyone hasn't looked at that website, go and have a look. It's great for people, you know, new people to Bridge to learn a little bit about what Bridge is. It's a really user-friendly website, playbridge.co.nz. So we create a page hanging off that, specifically with your club details. So the person clicks through, they read about when the lessons are, how long they take, what the cost is, what the location is, and then there's the phone number and email, and they can contact the club directly from there. So then it's over to the club to foster that connection and get those people into lessons. So the campaign runs, the lessons start, and then I eventually get round to summarising the results and then sharing them back with the club, and including any learnings and what we might do differently next time. So that's the process we're in at the moment.
And the great thing too is that New Zealand Bridge has just started the supervised plays for all these new people that have come through the lessons.
It started last night, and there were 38 tables.
Nice.
Wow. Can you believe that? A huge success. You know, it just shows that there's such demand for that next level. You know, that's what we were talking about before, right?
Yeah.
How to transition people from.
I was pushing it to my people at the lessons, and I was like, look, go on. There's zero cost, and you just get to play.
Yeah. And I think it was an hour and a half. It's easy. You can do it from your lounge. So what we really need clubs to keep reminding their learners and new players about that,
absolutely. You know,
because that continues to run from now. It started off really good, but we've got to keep that momentum going.
That's right. Yeah.
I think there's a bit of resistance to this online stuff. We both love it, don't we, Marianna?
Yeah, we're advocates for it.
I mean, the numbers playing is just sort of overwhelming. You'll have 30, 40, 50 tables playing online. And unfortunately, face-to-face, you'll have like 18 or 16, and that's probably quite reasonable. And I know you've got a bigger catchment because people can obviously play from Invercargill or Kerikeri or wherever, whereas they're not going to travel all the way to Hamilton or to Wellington or wherever the heck it is. And, of course, the cost is so much better. Some people are quite anti it. Hey, we're not saying we're going to make it compulsory.
No, that's right. It's an option, hey, for those that to whom it appeals. And, you know, my sense is that there probably will be a swing towards online, and, you know, it will become sort of, it's the sexy new thing for a while. But I think there'll be a reverting back, because fundamentally, you know, we have the human need of connection, and that's one of the things that Bridge players, most Bridge players, really love, you know, that ability to have that face-to-face connection. So I think there'll be a course correction a bit further down the line where people will be drawn back into that environment, as long as clubs can create a really safe, welcoming, nurturing environment for people to play in.
I think that's already happened a bit, actually. I think there are better numbers playing face-to-face. For a lot of people, it is just the cost, you know. It's quite expensive to go to Wellington for the weekend and play bridge, stay somewhere and whatever.
And your plane flight gets delayed or cancelled, and you end up having to drive back. It's just horrendous sometimes. But when you play bridge competitively, it's just one of the things that you put up with. 90% of the players are probably social players. Would that be around the right percentage, Barry?
I reckon it probably is. I mean, what you're saying is that most bridge players only play at the club. They don't travel away to tournaments or whatever. So I mean, one thing about bridge, the cost of it is usually pretty reasonable if you're just playing club bridge and you're not traveling away and having dinner out and staying in a hotel somewhere. So I guess from that point of view, I think the face-to-face thing is going to flourish. Like you say, it's the competitive ones playing online in tournaments, but that's a minority.
So what's your next big project, Mel?
Well, I can announce here first that we're launching an event marketing kit. So a kit that clubs can have couriered to them to support them with events. So, you know, some are at local farmers expos or local community events where you want to have a stand. We've got all the gear. We've got the banners. We've got the funny hats. Sonia Adams is in behind this. So there's costumes. There's the work. Yep. So we'll send more information out to clubs about that as they start thinking about what's coming up over spring and summer in terms of events. And, you know, that can be a good marketing tactic to add to your toolkit. Talking about toolkit, we are going to be talking with the regional committee representatives at the regional conference in a couple of weeks about what clubs want to see in a toolkit. So, you know, creating more templates and other tools, sharing ideas to better support clubs in the marketing space, but also in the club administration and governance space as well. I'm looking ahead to running this Facebook and Instagram campaign again early next year, so in a couple of months' time. It's pretty much we finish this round, get the results out, and then kick it off again. So most of the clubs that participated are super keen to run again, and hopefully we get a few more coming on board. My aim is to support clubs in this way, in quite a hands-on way for the first few years, but then to upskill them along that journey so eventually they can be running these themselves at any time that they want to. It's sort of a two-pronged thing. And the last thing to mention is really thinking about what would change the dial. You know, we're running these great campaigns, we're supporting clubs with their local marketing efforts. You know, what's my wildest, craziest sort of no budget ideas around changing that perception so that Bridge is in the awareness set of all of those people in that 45 plus age range. So the awareness of it and the understanding that it's a fun, enjoyable pastime for life is there. So, you know, what can we do to really shift that up? So starting to think about that and talk to some creative friends in that space as well.
That sounds pretty good. Thanks to Mel. Our last 10 minutes of her segment with the Bridge Zone will be aired next week. Now, I'm coming to you to close the show.
So the tip for the week is a bit of major if you've got one. So it's really important when you're responding to partners opening bid that you try and find a fit in the major. Now, that might sound obvious, but quite often partner opens a diamond and you get all excited. You've got five diamonds in your hand and you think, oh, that's awesome. I'll support partners' diamonds. But just because you've got a diamond fit doesn't mean you can't go looking for a spade fit as well.
Yeah.
Or whatever, a heart fit. So if you've got a major, you've got to bid it, because otherwise you'll miss out on your 4-4 major fit. You can always go back to that minor later if you want to. Bid a major. The first thing you're doing looking for in Bridge is trying to find a fit in a major. And if I hear one more time somebody telling me that when their partner opens one diamond and they bid one no trump, it shows 6 to 9 points and doesn't even say anything about not containing a four-card major, I'm going to scream. Because seriously, if you've got a major, a partner bids a diamond, and you got a major, you need to bid it. I don't care if you've got 6 to 9. If you bid one heart or one spade, it just shows 6+ and a 4-card major. One no trump denies a 4-card major.
Absolutely.
Bid the bloody major is what I'm saying. And that's my top for the week.
All right. Well, we'll catch you next week.
Bye for now.
New Zealand Bridge, sponsoring Bridge from beginner to international nationwide. This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.